Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton is fine. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chasedown Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Training camp is just 3 weeks away. This offseason couldn't be going by any quicker, and nothing says September NBA podcast content quite like a mailbag episode. I want to give a big thanks to everyone that submitted questions for today's podcast, and joining me today to answer those questions is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
It's going well. Just got done with a little vacation up to the Northeast, celebrated a friend's wedding in Maine, spent a little time in Boston, spent a little time in Portland, Maine, so spent a little time in York, Maine.
It was Would you call him your main man?
Oh, I'm hanging up. It's over. No, it was a great time. First vacation with the child, who was an absolute rock star. No tears on the plane either way. So I wasn't that person that everyone quietly or sometimes not quietly resents. That was great. It was still super hard. As pleasant as she was, it was still super hard vacation with a baby. I told Kylie, next one, we're doing like a resort. Pool's going to be the babysitter. Can't wait.
Yeah. That does sound like a little lower maintenance if you go that route instead.
Speaking of going back to the Cavs, anyone else forget Lauri Markkanen was on the team? Because I kind of like time froze in space for me while I was gone. And then I came back and I was like, oh, yeah.
Carter, you'll be shocked to know that I did not forget because I've already done the updated rosters in 2K.
And so you've been playing for weeks.
And I've been putting up some disgusting stat lines that you would find morally offensive.
That sounds correct, given your terrible 2K philosophy.
You know what? Yeah, I stick with what I know and I stick with what I like. And speaking of terrible, I want to apologize on the front end if my voice sounds a little hectic. We had the Labor Day Classic. Some of the fellas came over for that yesterday.
Everyone knows what that is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Don't need to explain that one. Cavs fans know the Labor Day Classic.
Oh yeah, they know the Bomber Rider Labor Day Classic every single year. It basically think of them as our Pittsburgh. We had won one game in the last 17 years on Labor Day in Saskatchewan, and we finally won another one. So that was a lot of fun. We beat the undefeated team. Now we are first place in the West.
I'm really proud of you. And I heard you had a Paxton Lynch sighting. We did have a legend.
Paxton Lynch, third string quarterback for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
Well, if you don't go to a CFL game to see superstars, what do you go for?
Exactly. It's always funny to see guys trickle in from the NFL and then fail. It's always interesting to see when that happens. But we should probably get to some of these questions. And I'm going to start off with one that I think we're going to have the exact same answer to. But our buddy Joe asked, if we could improve one aspect of Sexton, Garland, and Okoro's games, what would it be?
If I recall correctly, I only skimmed the Discord for these because you did all the work, which I appreciate. But mm-hmm. I think Joe just said something along the lines of, like, if you would improve them as, you know, individuals. And I liked the framing of that question more because it was like, I think that Colin could pick up, you know, crocheting. I think he could. Yeah. I think that would help round him out as an individual. let's just dive in. I mean, Sexton, I think really it's going to, and I want to get really granular. Can we agree to get really granular with this? Okay. I know it's a little bit different than what we normally do, where we kind of talk wide angle. But I think granularly for Colin, the one thing I want to see him get better at is attentiveness off ball on defense. Mm.
Yeah, I think that would make a big difference.
Because I think he can be a pretty good on-ball defender when he really wants to. But the attentiveness off-ball is what makes the pairing untenable defensively. Like the fact that it's not like if you're going to run Sexland as a backcourt, it's important that you're only letting the physicality stuff beat you. Like because they're already undermanned physically. With that backcourt mm-hmm. defensively, if you add mental lapses to it, it's just brutal. So that's kind of my Colin point of feedback that I like. If he can improve that, then everything gets a lot easier. Like they hurt themselves so often.
I think that's a really good call, because I was going to answer defensive consistency, but I think the off-ball struggles are more consistent. Like, even when he has a good defensive game, it's usually him playing good individual defense, good man-to-man defense. Maybe the opposing team isn't running him through a bunch of screens. I think of the game against Washington where he did a pretty fantastic job guarding Bradley Beal. And those are the moments that really stand out for me, where he's actually asserted himself. He looks confident defensively. He's making an impact. And in a lot of close games, he'll make plays. He'll make high-impact defensive plays. And I would like to see that more consistently. But I think if we're going kind of granular, as you said, and zeroing in on one thing, it's the off-ball consistency. I think if he showed more attentiveness off-ball, it would really, really help him be more effective. Because the rest I feel pretty confident in, right? Like, you see him working on his pull-up this offseason. He's always come back a little bit better. His passing has got better steadily. There's been improvement on defense, but there hasn't been a leap on that end. And I think that sort of leap would make him like one of those kind of no doubt all-star caliber players if he were to add that to his game.
Cool. I completely agree. You want to take Garland next, since I went first last time?
Pull up threes. I want pull up
threes. I'm glad you took the easy answer so I could take a less easy answer.
Yeah, I'm you know, path of least resistance, as I am battling from yesterday. But yeah, I think the pull up threes would open up almost every other aspect of his game. So I'll take the easy one there.
Yeah, I mean, duh. Take more. I think we all know it. I think Darius should know it by now.
Yeah.
I think the coaching staff knows it and has said it. The 3-point pull up volume is the primary differentiator between him being a pretty damn good point guard and an elite point guard. I really do believe that. If I was going to go a little bit more granular, though, I would say it's interior to exterior passing. That's the one. That's one of the weaknesses in his game right now. He's really crafty as an interior passer, feeding bigs, feeding cutters. But because of his frame and, you know, Jackson Frank, when he did that kind of big Garland profile last year, spotlighted this, is, you know, he sometimes struggles to get enough oomph on his passes back out. And as much as people want to gripe about the 3-point shooting that has been put around Cleveland, neither of their guards are particularly adept at getting the ball out to those shooters.
You cut out for me. You froze.
Okay.
You froze at the Jackson Frank part.
Okay. I think I've stabilized, so I'm going to pick up at the beginning of that sentence.
Okay.
In Jackson Frank's profile on Garland last year, he spotlighted this. He kind of mentioned that, you know, Darius is a very good interior passer, but when he tries to get the ball out, he kind of struggles to put enough oomph on it. You know, the interior passing is good, and his frame kind of limits how much zip he can put on those passes back out to the perimeter. And as much as people dog the shooting that have been put around the team and have kind of criticized the roster construction, I think one of the biggest problems is neither of their guards are that good at kicking it out to shooters.
Mm-hmm.
So
I would say Sexton does a better job than Garland in that one area of passing. Like, he at least kind of recognizes those drive and kick opportunities. And that's one thing that I really think adding Lauri Markkanen will help with, is you now have a guy that's going to find those passing lanes. He's going to move around on the perimeter. He's very active.
And by
those
the
opportunities
way,
are going to be there for those guys to kick it out to him.
And by the way, can get a shot off with a little more or a little less airspace. So if Darius does struggle to get it out there with enough zip, you know, that's the thing, is sometimes he'll make the right pass and get it to the guy, but it's not perfectly on target, or it is doesn't have enough zip on it, so the defender's able to close out. But I think that's Darius's kind of, that's kind of a niche point of improvement for Darius. But as he keeps developing his body, making sure that he's able to generate those angles and put enough heat on the passes to actually generate good looks, I think is a big part of raising the Cavs' offensive ceiling.
Yeah, I totally agree. Where are you at with Okoro? I feel like there's the obvious one there as well.
Yeah, man. It's like I kind of get the impression he did work on his craft a little bit, attacking the basket.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going back to shooting. I think it's catch and shoot threes, even just the corner three. I think that's a good place to start. You know, they've got in a guy like Laurie and a guy like Mobley who seem to prefer above the break threes right now. They've got people who are going to fill that above the break space along with Sexton and Garland. So, like, listen, if all he does is plant himself in the corner and turn himself into a good three-point shooter, that's a from those two spots, that's a huge jump from what they had last year.
Yep.
And if he's shooting with confidence, not just taking the uber wide open ones, that's an even bigger jump. So that it's a simple answer. It's maybe not as niche as the other two I gave, but it's hard to say anything other than that.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about how we wanted to see his ball handling improve, and I think there were signs of that in summer league. But the obvious thing, and the thing that would really help kind of better utilize the Mobley and Allen pairing or a lot of other lineups that the Cavs want to use this season, is if he can knock down those catch and shoot threes. So I think that one is pretty clear and easy. King of Klee asks, how much time we would like to see Darius Garland play with rookie Rubio this year?
Ricky
Rubio.
That's not a pairing I'm terribly interested in, to be honest. I think that really every minute Darius sits, Ricky should be playing.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, like, that's what I'm more interested in. I'm interested in having the offense be orchestrated at 48 minutes a game.
Yeah.
And like, to that extent, like, I'm never gonna want to play them together so much that I sacrifice that. So sure, it'll be fun to see, you know, Darius get to play a little bit off ball, play next to a true point guard that can feed him for open looks, hitting him in semi-transition, things like that. I think it's a fine pairing, but it's not the pairing that I really am desperate to see, because really I'm much more interested in what Rubio does with Darius off the floor.
Yep, and I'm going to go way more specific and say 9 minutes per game, because I think what you said is accurate. If we're assuming Garland's playing 32 minutes, that means Rubio's going to play 16 without him, likely with Colin Sexton in that time. But Rubio's going to play about 25 minutes a night. I think he's going to be firmly in kind of a sixth, seventh man role for the Cavs, and he's going to play a lot of minutes. So there are going to be those opportunities, assuming he is playing 25, that would leave him with 9 with Garland. And it's really, I don't think Garland would necessarily be the shooting guard, quote unquote, in those lineups. I think they would take turns initiating the offense. It's a 2-point guard look. But I do think it would be really nice to have Garland get someone, have someone feed him easy looks, have him come off of screens, work on his off-ball game, because no matter what the Cavs ultimately become as they continue to grow together, Garland learning how to play off-ball is going to be important, especially when you have Mobley, Sexton's improving as a ball handler, Okoro's trying to add that to his game. Garland being able to move around off-ball and really kind of capitalize on those opportunities, I think it is a great way for him to raise his offensive ceiling.
For sure. And, you know, the thing is, they're going to have to play those two together, and given what they've got at the backup two right now, it's probably the best option to play Ricky at the two. The one thing I'll say is it should be pretty matchup dependent, because, like, I think you lose a lot of what makes Ricky Rubio a great defender, putting him on twos. I think he is a great defender of point guards.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would love, you know, when you're playing a team that's running like a Reggie Bullock or a Danny Green at the two, where you can kind of stash Darius over there and keep Ricky at the point of attack, I think that's really where that pairing's going to thrive on that end of the floor.
Yeah, and he guarded twos a fair amount, actually, last season. I think 35%.
Yeah, I just don't like it as much, frankly. Like,
I'm talking about Garland.
Because, you know, they'll put kind of the, I think the Okoro guard best player standard operating procedure put Darius and Colin kind of all over the place on the court last year. But yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at. I think it's a fine pairing. It's not a pairing I'm like, oh, can't wait for that, because I do think that the value Ricky adds is on the other margins of the floor, but I'm certainly, you know, interested to see how it works.
Yeah, I am as well, and I really do think Rubio is going to bring a lot to this team. And Corey asks, will Rubio be our most impactful offseason addition for this upcoming season? over Mobley and Markkanen?
Certainly over Mobley. I don't think over Markkanen. Because here's the thing, Rubio is a great organizer of the offense, but it's not like he is without flaws. I mean, there's a reason he's a backup at this point in his career, and it's because he can't finish and he can't really shoot. Obviously the shooting's come and gone at points, but there are things he limits you with offensively, whereas Laurie on offense should be a straight up floor raiser. Like,
yeah,
a guy who just generates open, you know, generates a high volume of 3-point attempts, has a significant amount of gravity that allows guys like Isaac or Colin to cut through and get easy buckets, makes Jarrett and Evan have an easier time as a lob threat. I just think across the board, he's just the kind of guy who is a little more than the sum of his parts on offense, at least from a role perspective. Whereas Rubio sometimes is a weird mix of more than you'd expect and less than you'd expect, you know?
Right.
Where, you know, if Rubio's off ball, he's probably not helping your offense that much. And Laurie kind of should be helpful offensively pretty much every time he's on the floor, unless the Cavs have made a pretty big mistake in trading for him. Like, I think that's kind of like, it's kind of a pretty clear duality. If he's not helpful just by being out there, then rut-row. But I don't expect that to be the case.
I appreciate you answering Corey's actual question, because I said offseason instead of offensive addition.
Our rundown. So yeah, everyone's going to be really confused when I answer that.
And I was like, maybe I should let him sit with it, where he answered the question properly, but he didn't answer my question. So you would just look foolish. But you know what? I'll own up to it. That's fine.
I think Ricky, if to answer your actual question that you asked me, I think, yeah, Ricky might be more impactful just because of how bad the backup 1 and 2 minutes were last year.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, there seems to be, there's this narrative around Rubio that he's going to miss a ton of time, that he's always kind of been injury prone, and that was certainly true earlier in his career. But you look at the past like 7 years, and he basically never misses more than like 5 or 6 games. He's active for almost every single game, and if he's that level of reliable, that's a massive addition. Like, that is going to be really, really impactful for the Cavs just because of how dramatic that drop-off was and how much easier he's going to make things for Sexton, how much he's going to help the second unit, which was one of the areas where the Cavs really gave up a lot of ground last year. It'll be interesting to see what those on-off splits look like, especially with for someone like Sexton, who has really kind of struggled in that area historically, but now has a more solid foundation when you talk about Rubio running that backup point guard position. But I will say Markkanen will be the most impactful offensive addition for this upcoming season, because you look at what a difference Kevin Love made last year in the very brief stint that he was playing, and he wasn't even playing well, but it made such a big difference. And Markkanen at this point of his career and their careers is the better offensive player and should really help unlock a lot of things. So from a purely offensive perspective, I think Lauri Markkanen's the answer. Now, our guy Hiram asks, do we think Lamar Stevens is going to take over Larry's role, and how effective do we think he will be?
This is one of those ones where my first instinct was to say, no, he will not do that. And he's not going to play. So, you know, cool your jets. And then I kind of thought about it more. And then I thought about the way we talked about it, how, you know, maybe Jetty and Dylan Windler are kind of disappointing at the three this year, not delivering what you'd hope for. And then you go, well, Larry did get press ganged into playing some three last year. Lamar is actually a much more natural three on defense than Larry ever was.
Yeah.
And then you go, I can see a path for this, especially with the additions of Laurie, where you have an elite shooter at the four, and Mobley, who is a budding shooter who might be playing some backup 5 minutes, and all of a sudden you go, I think I see a roadmap to Lamar Stevens getting a lot of minutes at the three. Now, I don't see a roadmap to him getting very many minutes at the four. I just think it's too, barring a Kevin Love buyout, it just seems like there's not enough room right now. But I see a way. It's not impossible to see a roadmap for Larry and for Lamar in the rotation replacing Larry, though it's not a guarantee by any means. What do you think about that answer?
That was a thoughtful answer. I hadn't thought about that. I think there's maybe a path to him replacing those minutes at the three. You've kind of opened my eyes to that. But what I would say is Evan Mobley is the one that's really replacing Larry's role from last year. I feel like Mobley is the Nance replacement while Laurie is basically replacing Love, which is awkward, of course, because he's still here. But that theoretical role, that theoretical role that Kevin Love would play with the young core is what Lauri Markkanen is going to be bringing to the table. So I think that is kind of going to be that dynamic where those playmaking minutes at the four, that's going to be something Mobley will bring to the table. He's going to be that defensive guy that can either switch or play some drop coverage and play alongside Jared Allen. So I think that's going to be his role next year. What do you make of some of the people kind of downplaying expectations now with Mobley based on, I guess, his finishing in summer league? I'm finding it to be a little bit weird.
I don't know. I think he's going to take a minute. I think he'll benefit from legitimate guard play.
Mm-hmm.
From going from Hands to Rubio and Garland at the point guard is a pretty big upgrade. Yeah. But you know, like, I don't know, I'm not expecting like 20 points a game or anything like that. So like, you know, I think that, you know, like what's the stat line for him that feels right? I know we're moving out of mailbag territory here a bit, but like if you had just pick his the statsy slash points, rebounds, assists, what is it?
15-7-4. I'd be thrilled. I'd be pretty thrilled with that if that's what he was bringing to the table. Like
the path to him getting 10-12 points a game his rookie year, which might be a little disappointing for some, is pretty clear. You know, if the jumper isn't coming along and the spacing's a little more cramped, like let's say Isaac's jumper hasn't progressed the way we wanted to. Like, I don't know, man. While I'm not necessarily downplaying Mobley, I see the range of outcomes where the people who are downplaying him and like saying, hey, he's going to be a bit more of a project. Like, I see that range of outcome happening, not terribly unfeasibly, I guess. I know it's a bit of a wishy-washy answer, but like,
yeah, that's wishy-washy as hell.
I'm sorry. That's the way I see it. I feel like he could either immediately click with these guards and kind of be an absolute terror, or the touch and the strength and the jumper are just, you know, a year away, and we go, he's a bit of a project on that end.
Mm-hmm. The thing that gets me, so with summer league, I feel like he did everything well but finished. Like the passing was a little better than we expected, the ball handling looked good.
I didn't think the ball handling looked that good.
I thought it looked pretty good.
I think that when guys got into his grill, he picked up the ball. I think that his handle.
I'm probably thinking more open floor. I was thinking more open floor.
He looks very in control. When people get up in his chest, he stops it down, and that's fine. Like, he's a 7-footer, and that part of his game's going to need to come. But like I just think he is a bit. He has stuff on his game. In his game right now that could very clearly lead to a rough offensive season, where you go, yep, we still love him, but he has some stuff to work on. That's all I'm saying. I think the other outcome is where he just eats on wide open lobs and duck-ins and interior passing. Like there's a lot of roads up the mountain here.
Yeah, I think the finishing is going to be inconsistent at times. It's going to come and go, but I think his overall impact is going to be meaningful. Like I think he is going to be a plus player as a rookie, and it's just a matter of how inconsistent are those offensive flashes. Are they able to kind of optimize them? Like those easy buckets that they can get him, I think those are going to be there frequently. It's going to be okay when he does try to expand his game, when he is taking pull-ups, when he's doing other things, is the ball going down? And I think that is going to vary on a night-to-night basis. But yeah, that was just something I was kind of, it was sticking in my craw a little bit, because I've seen a lot of people kind of reacting to the changing of expectations. And I
just think people are protecting themselves, and
I think so too. I think it's emotional hedging. I think it's
maybe it is, but also it's not illogical emotional hedging. So I'm not too pressed about this one, Justin.
Yeah, that's fair. Lexapro on Twitter asks, at this point in the offseason, what is your take on signing another wing? Is the addition of a guy like Denzel Valentine or Garrison Matthews worth signing, or would you rather rock with Jetty and Dylan?
I don't think those are mutually exclusive. If you got a roster spot to burn, you should burn it on another wing.
I got to be honest, Denzel Valentine does very little for me.
Yeah, sure. I think Bulls fans would tell you the same thing. But, you know, like when you're signing people for the minimum, what you're doing is you're hoping that something clicks. Mm-hmm. Garrison Matthews seems like an interesting hypothetical person. Chandler Hutchinson, you just got cut by the Spurs. An interesting hypothetical something. I don't think that there is a single player you can sign for the minimum that you go, they will definitely be getting minutes above Jetty and Dylan.
Yeah, that's fair.
What you do is you add the body, and you let those bodies fight it out. There's a lot of upside to doing that, because maybe Denzel Valentine, who spent his entire career in a weird place in Chicago, maybe the 3-point jumper gets there. He settles in as a solid defender, and he just plays his role, which he had a hard time doing when you're a first round pick. Like, sometimes different locations go a long way for people. Garrison Matthews had a pretty nice year last year as a kind of a shooting specialist. Maybe he fits really well with what this Cavs team needs. He might not. They might not do that. But the point is, you at least spend the roster capital on a position of weakness to give yourself the highest chance of finding someone who can give you something on a given night. And it might end up being Jetty. But, you know, what if Jetty starts out the year hot, earns all the minutes, and then craters in the back half of the year, and you go, oh, well, we're going to have to give Dylan some minutes, or, hey, we're going to have to give Garrison some minutes. And you want to at least have the optionality to give those guys minutes that are already in your system, that know the place, that, like, that's why you spend the roster capital. I really do think that, you know, if there hasn't been a trade found by camp, it's time to bring one of these folks in. Because it's clear, you know, at least by the reporting, that a trade is not out of the option book right now. Like a guy like Terrence Ross obviously is someone we're both pretty interested in.
Yeah,
but if you're not going to get one of those kinds of guys, then yeah, you absolutely should sign another wing. Even if you're not, you don't promise them minutes, but you should at least sign them.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like having that competition. As it currently stands, if there isn't a trade, there is no one guy that I think can just firmly claim all those minutes that the 3-1 Okoro isn't playing there. Like, it's going to be a competition. Guys are going to get different looks. Dylan Windler had moments last year where he looked like a pretty solid rotation player. I'm expecting him to get some opportunities there. But yeah, bringing in someone like Garrison Matthews to give you another option is something that makes sense to me. Like, I think that would absolutely be worthwhile. Valentine, I just don't have as much interest. Like, I'd rather have someone like Matthews who maybe doesn't have...
He's got a little mystery box element there.
Well, it's not that. It's actually the opposite. I think Denzel Valentine, you're hoping, okay, maybe we can unlock a little bit of upside. Maybe he'll settle into a role and whatnot. I'd rather take someone like Matthews who knows what his role is. I feel like that's more important when you're trying to develop the six young players that the Cavs have now, right? Like, I just want guys that know their role, stick to it, and there's not a whole lot of surprises. They're not going to try to do anything that's outside of their wheelhouse. I want that stability when it comes to the rest of the rotation.
Yeah. I don't think that there's a person that could sign at the wing that would engender a really angry reaction from me.
No.
I just think this should be your 14th, 15th man, and maybe if they get better, then cool.
Like, speaking of which, Taco Fall.
Oh gosh, yeah. I mean, guys, it's just a camp invite. Everyone, breathe, everybody. It's a non-guaranteed deal. It's fine.
I really enjoyed it, especially because, like,
hey,
the funny thing is, for all the 7-footers the Cavs have, it's basically Allen and Fiondu as the only, like, actual centers on the roster, which is kind of mind-boggling to think of.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if he takes Camagelli's minutes, then cool. You know, whatever. I still think... Yeah.
I think he's going to play with the Charge. I think that's the most likely way. But you know what? Whatever. Take a camp flyer. That's the exact type of guy you should take a camp flyer on, especially when he has a reputation of being just an good awesome vibes teammate.
Guy. Yeah. Good vibes, guys, go a long way. You know, would I like Hartenstein back? Sure. It seems like that ship has sailed, barring a Kevin Love buyout where you actually need an extra. Because, like, if they buy out Kevin Love, they're short a big. In my opinion, yeah. that they really can count on that can play some 5 minutes.
That can absorb like 13 minutes a game.
Yeah, I mean, like Dean Wade can kind of do it if you shift Mobley up. Lamar can do it if you shift Mobley up. But like you would like one more five, I think. Mm-hmm. But in the interim, you know, I'm having a hard time talking about Thaco Fall, to be honest.
I want to give a shout out to one of our followers on Twitter, guy that's been supporting the pod for a lot. Bron Jetty on Twitter, one of our Brazilian fans. The Brazilian support for the Chase Down is awesome. Like there is a section of Cavs fans there that are just phenomenal. So I wanted to take a moment to shout them out. But Bron Jetty asks, what will be the biggest factor for a strong Cavs jump and play in hope? What do you think would be the one factor that would make the biggest difference as the Cavs shoot for the play-in?
I think it is the Mobley-Allen pairing working right away. I think that if it is a struggle with those two for the Cavs to win in the minutes they're playing together early on,
mm-hmm.
Then they're going to have a hard time winning enough games to get to the play-in. I think if those two go, if it makes sense right away and those two are wiping out teams on defense and assaulting the rim in transition and on lobs and with, you know, beautiful interior passing on offense, then okay, yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, I think that because if it doesn't work, then uh-oh, because those guys are going to have to play a lot of minutes together right now. Mm-hmm. As it currently stands. So that's where I go. Where do you go?
I'm going to bring out Reckless Justin here, Carter.
Oh my God.
It's coming. It's Darius Garland, and it's Garland taking the leap. I don't think Darius Garland has made a leap yet in his career. I think Darius just got healthy, and that's who he was. And last year was him just being healthy. If Darius Garland takes a leap next season, we have seen what a good guard can do to raise your floor in the NBA.
Sure. I mean, I don't think this is as reckless as you think it is.
I think the reckless part is me saying that he hasn't made a leap yet and it's coming next season. That is me getting reckless because I think Darius is really going to have a monster season, breakout all-star conversation type season, especially coming off Team USA, the way that he's been putting in work. Actually, frankly, the way that the Cavs young guys have been putting in work and being around the team all offseason is something that's really cool to see. I love that they're working on developing that chemistry and whatnot this early on, because I think that's going to be a
seems
big
like it's a team there. Of dudes that are sick of losing.
They're sick of losing, and they seem to like playing together, which, like, that's the stuff that people will roll their eyes at, but it gets me fired up. I think Darius making the leap where, let's say, he goes to, like, that 23-8 type season where he's just making everybody better. We've seen him become a very effective scorer at times, even with limited spacing. So if he's doing that sort of thing, I think it makes everybody else's lives easier. And I'm saying that while also in some ways taking for granted what Colin Sexton brings to the table, because I'm just counting on Sexton to improve from last season or to just be a more refined version of what he brought last year at the very least.
Yeah,
so
it's
if
funny.
Garland makes that leap, I think those two together, the Sexland backcourt, has enough firepower to actually get this team into that play-in conversation.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, you mentioned the Sexton thing in there. Our dear friend Hiram always is talking about how he's just going to add another 4 points per game every offseason until he's scoring 50 a game. And, you know, that's not how it typically works. It really is typically, you hit these numbers and then you get good at actually helping your team win if you're going to keep growing. And I think that's the much more reasonable goal for Sexton. I don't think you should hope for more points or more assists. I think you should just hope for better at basketball. And Darius is the one where you could see a big statistical jump.
Yeah. And if the jump comes with Darius, I think it makes absolutely everything easier for everybody else. So that's why I feel like that is the clearest path for Garland to become one of those household names and one of those bankable stars that you know gets you into that play-in conversation. So to me, that is by far the clearest path. But circling back to the conversation about the backup small forward position, Kev V6 asks, our thoughts on Dean Wade playing minutes at the backup three?
I like him much more than Kev V5. I think that Wade makes sense eating some backup 3 minutes, but it's not what you want. It's just not what you want. I think what you want is Dylan and Jetty to be better than that guy because they're actually twos and threes. Yeah. Like, I think as good as Wade has been for them and was last year, he's not a three. He's just not. And, you know, that's not his game. That's not where he's going to excel. He's going to excel in pulling bigs away from the basket. Yep. So, you know, it's fine. I'll bet he has to play some minutes there this year. Is it what Kobe Altman and JB Bickerstaff should aim to do? No, it shouldn't be. And honestly, even Lamar makes more sense to me in that context because Lamar is at least physically built more like a three. Like Lamar was clearly kind of a college three, and then in the NBA it was like, well, you got to shoot in the NBA to be a three, so you are a four now.
If you're talking about playing with Mobley and Allen, would you rather have Laurie play some minutes at the three or Dean?
With Mobley and Allen? Dean. Dean,
I think
probably.
So, too.
Because Dean can move his feet, but it's not, none of this is ideal, you know, they should know that. That should not be plan A. I hope it's not, because that tells me that they really don't believe in those two on the wing. To spot Isaac any minutes at all, and that they've got a big hole to fill in this roster, which is not what you want in a year where you're trying to actually start to win some games, which, again, whether you think they should or not, seems to be every bit of messaging from the team is like, hey, we're trying to make the play-in.
Yeah, we're trying to be competitive. These guys need to start winning. Like, that's it's a pretty damn important thing when you're talking about the team building process. Our friend Billy asks, how much would a theoretical Dylan Windler raise the floor for the Cavs? So basically what we expected Windler to be in and what we saw in some brief flashes, but the kind of ball mover, 3-and-D, smart player. What would Dylan Windler kind of reaching his potential mean for the Cavs?
Yeah, I think he would be insane. I mean, he is the theoretical Dylan Windler is what the team needs. Yeah. By you know, like in every way. I think that he is the kind of player who has gravity, who can shoot off the move.
Remember how excited we were getting when Windler was doing the right things? Like
that February, which is really his best month. He slashed. It was 45 from the field, 37 from three. Averaged 7 and 5. It's not like he was crazy numbers, but he really helped the offense just by being out there. He was a really smart cutter. He leveraged his shooting gravity for easy buckets on the inside.
He was a glue guy.
I thought he was an okay playmaker. I thought defensively he showed a lot. So it's not like there's no proof of concept for theoretical Windler. And this was a guy that, you know, that role is really what the Cavs, you know, some wanted the Cavs to pay up big for Duncan Robinson just to you know, get a supercharged version of theoretical Dylan Windler.
By the way, his numbers are better than Duncan at that age.
Yeah, enough. but, you know, so I am not ruling it out. I mean, he might just be messed up from that. You know, the injuries might just keep piling up and we might not get to see the kind of player we hope to see from him. But I'm going to hold out some degree of hope. There is a path to that guy being an everyday player for this team and being really, really helpful because his skill set is sorely needed on this team.
Yeah, like you can understand exactly what they were thinking picking him because he makes a ton of sense. And it's just so unfortunate that a guy that never really had any injury history prior to being drafted just had everything go sideways. So I hope he can get on track because he really does bring the exact skill set that the Cavs need from that small forward position, that backup three position. So he would really raise the floor if he was able to stay on the floor. And I think that's the biggest thing is, can he stay healthy? Because if he can, I have some level of confidence that he's going to be a contributor in those minutes. So fingers crossed for that. DH asks, what two-man big combo do you think leads the team in minutes? And I thought this was a fantastic question because I'm not 100% sure how I feel about it. Where are you at?
So I think we should split this into will and should.
Okay.
I think Mobley Allen will lead the team in minutes. I think JB likes riding his kids, which is funny because that was not his reputation in Memphis. Mm-hmm. But Isaac played a ton of heavy minutes last year, even when it wasn't super helpful minutes. I think the team is invested in Mobley in a pretty major way and letting him kind of ride through some bumps. I think they're very invested in Jarrett and those and. I think as a result, those two are just going to lead the lead. That's going to be the top pairing. But I think it will be close with Laurie, Jarrett.
I think it's going to be super close as well. Because
honestly,
I think,
among all three pairings, I think it'll be not wildly far. I think all three of them will play like about, 24 or, 48 divided by three is kind of close to be where it's going to be. But I do think it will be Mobley Allen. I think it should probably be Laurie Allen unless Mobley really jumps off the screen right away.
Yeah.
But what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be Mobley and Allen. It's going to be super close because I think from a big man position, it should be very similar to what we talked about with Garland and Rubio, where one of Jared Allen and Evan Mobley is on the floor at all times for the Cavs. And Laurie's just going to split his minutes between the two. Or maybe you see Kevin Love play 15 minutes a night as the fourth big. Maybe he's doing that with Mobley as well. But I think Laurie's going to split his minutes between the two. Maybe Allen and Mobley are only going to play 12 minutes a game together, assuming that Mobley's essentially playing those backup 5 minutes as well, which maybe you can get away with if it is with Laurie Markkanen, who's another 7-footer, that can maybe take a little bit of the bruising inside for him, even though that's not necessarily
a lot of evidence to support that.
I understand that, but that's why I'm saying it would happen with the second unit, because really how many second units have a guy that's going to do that? It's like maybe Philly with Andre Drummond.
Yeah.
And
no,
And at that point, you just have to deny him the offensive rebounds and you should be okay. But yeah, like it might be 12 minutes a night that leads the team when it comes to big man pairings. Because I just think with the talent that they have and also just whoever is earning it on a night-to-night basis, I think it's going to vary wildly and it's all going to be split pretty evenly down the middle.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think it's that far off, ultimately. I think that they like because of the way they've built this roster, they almost have to play all three pairings pretty even. Yep. If they're going to give those three, the 28 to 30 minutes a game they need.
Yeah, I completely agree. Mason asks, should Okoro be in bench lineups with ball handling or have plays drawn up for him? Is reps such as what he had in Summer League where he's kind of initiating the offense? Do you think he showed enough in Summer League to justify some of those reps, or would you still like to see him kind of primarily playing off ball and a secondary initiator?
I think secondary initiator. I think I think he showed enough to be a pretty good primary initiator in Summer League, at least as a scorer. But that, when put onto the NBA curve, says, oh, now you should be a capable secondary attacker in the NBA. And I think that's really where he's going to be best used as a player right now. Now, I think that if he continues to grow and continues to show more, then sure, keep escalating. But there's no reason to force it right now. If this team actually is pretty long on people who can dribble and shoot. Mm-hmm. at this point, or at least initiate offense. So, like, why force him to run 20 pick and rolls a game as the backup lead, you know, as the lead backup initiator? I don't see the point. I think him developing elsewhere is more meaningful right now. And kind of, yeah, so I'm just not in any hurry to do it. I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, me too. Especially when you are bringing in a veteran like Rubio. Like, he is one of the better backup point guards in the NBA. I think you want to utilize that. And as important as those reps are for his development, I don't see anything wrong with the ball swinging around and then maybe Okoro runs a side pick and roll, or sure, he does kind of those secondary actions where maybe he can show it a little bit. But
yeah, you literally sign Rubio to not make Okoro have to bring the ball up.
Right, as well as Sexton, right?
Like, same, yeah.
Yeah, it's you're simplifying things for them, and you have to find that balance, and that's going to be one of the biggest storylines next season, finding that balance of developmental reps while still trying to win the game. And a lot of the time, like, if you are having Okoro bring the ball up, you're going to have growing pains. You're going to have a lot of mistakes. And when your margin for error is thin next season, which it's going to be in a very competitive Eastern Conference, you have to be really smart when you are giving those developmental reps and when you're looking to build out other things. Now, maybe if it is a lost cause game where just they didn't have it that night and you're maybe looking to rest Rubio and Garland's out of the game, yeah, sure, you can give Okoro some of those reps, see what happens there. But when you're talking about competitive games where you have your full roster and you're not trying to make do or overcome some injuries, I'd rather see him limited to that secondary initiator role.
I agree. And that's fine. I don't think that's limiting him at all. And what's nice about when players do take leaps is they kind of force it most of the right time. Like JB won't be seeing Isaac absolutely cooking people and go, but we have Rubio. Like, no. Like if he's good enough to earn it, he'll kind of start taking it. That's the nice thing about wings. Like, they just kind of get the ball.
And ultimately, like, we can sit here and prognosticate and think about, okay, this is how I see them being used, and this is what the minutes might look like. But at the end of the day, it's going to be whoever's being the most effective on a night-to-night basis. Some nights guys are going to have it, some nights they're not. JB has shown he's willing to ride a hot hand. He's willing to bench anybody. There were games last season, even with the injuries, where pretty much every single core player got benched at one point or another. So I expect that again next season. And I think it's a healthy environment because there's going to be more than enough reps for everybody. It's just going to be whoever is capitalizing on them. Although, as I say that, I get to our final question, which I will combine the questions from Cavs Sense and Marcus Teston. What is Kevin Love's best role on this team, assuming that there's not a buyout? And what are some realistic endings for his situation in Cleveland?
I think the best case scenario for Kevin is he becomes that super sub, someone who comes in for 15 to 25 minutes a game, depending on how well he's playing. And absolutely lights it up off the bench, which, not that crazy, by the way. Like, I mean, he had a game where he dropped like 30 and 13 on the Celtics to end the year. He's still pretty good when he's healthy. I'm hoping that he gets healthy.
I see people assuming it's similar to what happened with Blake Griffin, where I think the assumption with Griffin was that he was dogging it in Detroit. If that was the case,
Wouldn't have happened.
The Olympic thing wouldn't have made any sense, right? Like, I think even last season, like, why would last season be the year that Kevin Love is just deciding not to play? They were actually competitive. They really could have used him early in the year. They were basically in playoff seeding for a little while. That wouldn't have been the time that would have occurred. So
no.
For me, Kevin Love being the fourth big, it might actually be beneficial. Like, assuming that there isn't a buyout and he's on the roster, have him as the fourth big. And have him
be one of the best fourth bigs in the league if he's healthy.
And he can build his way up to more minutes, because likely as he's continuing to rehab this nagging injury and whatnot, playing him 25 minutes a night might have a setback. It might make things worse for him. So if he's building up kind of the stamina and the ability to play more and more minutes. Maybe he gets to a point where he's rehabbed his value, at least to an extent where he feels more confident on the buyout market that he would get a contract, a la what happened to Kemba Walker. I don't know how this is going to play out. My assumption is this is going to end in a buyout, if I had to guess. But at the end of the day, like, Kevin Love's a professional with pride, and he's going to want to play. So as you kind of have to balance that with the three big men that are obviously going to be prioritized over him. But at the same time, as you said, Carter, there is a role for him. There is that fourth big role. And on nights that he hasn't and he's being impactful, he'll play more minutes. I think it's pretty straightforward from that perspective.
People will hate this take, and I know they're going to hate this take. I don't mind if there's games where he plays more than Laurie and Evan. I really don't mind. If he's killing it and playing really well, keep his ass out there. Best player. If this team is really trying to win, the players who are playing the best should play the most minutes.
Agreed. And that'll change on a night-to-night basis.
And I don't think there's anything harmful to Evan Mobley's development. If he's having a bad night or the season's starting to wear him down and Kevin goes out and hits three threes when he hops on the floor and makes some amazing connecting passes that gets the offense going, keep him out there. Like, I think there's a world in which this season, like, I feel like, and I said this on one of our more recent pods, but I feel like the narrative has gotten so dark with this, and maybe rightfully so, that people are only expecting the worst possible outcome as the only reasonable outcome.
Yeah.
And yeah, I know people are sick of talking about Kevin Love. I get it. But like, the fact of the matter is, when he plays well, he's still pretty damn good. And the idea of him being a helpful player in this team is not so far-fetched that we should rule it out entirely out of pocket, you know? So I think that is his best role. I think the most reasonable role is, or the most reasonable outcome is, he plays well enough to justify, to be willing to take a buyout. You know, I think that is probably the most likely outcome, is that he gets some minutes, he shows a bit. He does some, there's some, you know, some discussions with his agent where the agent goes, hey, I think we can at least get you your money back that you give up in the buyout. And the team decides whether that's worth it for them. My guess is they will. But, you know, as it currently stands, if reports are to be believed and he is not interested in giving any money back, then they're going to have to play him. And I hope that he comes in with a good attitude, because that's the best way for him. Like, the incentives have not always been aligned between Kevin Love and the organization. In this instance, I think they are 1-1.
Yep.
Kevin plays well, and Kevin gets out.
Yeah, to his credit, like, the only issues last season were the Toronto thing that was directed at referees, and that interview with Haynes, which, like, it wasn't a great look, but I don't think it was a massive issue. Like, he was a pretty good locker room presence. Now, the one caveat I'll add to your statement that, hey, there'll be nights where he plays more than Mobley or Laurie or whatever the case may be, I would say I don't want those guys to get pulled for him just for missing shots. Like, I don't want them to be looking over their shoulder. I think it should be process-based. Like, if they're making the right decisions out there, you will live with misses. You will live with them trying to expand their game. You will live with the growing pains. But if they're out there just jacking up terrible shots, not being impactful, missing rotations, not being in the right spots, that sort of thing,
then you can pull them. Yeah. Let's reframe this, though. It's not about pulling them because they're playing bad. It's giving him more minutes if he's playing well.
Yeah, no, and I understand. And that is
a hugely, hugely different conversation. You know, the idea of him being like this looming thing over Evan Mobley's shoulder, that's not really what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is Kevin comes out, because he's going to get 10 to 15 minutes a night no matter what, because that's how many minutes are available.
Yeah.
At that fourth big spot, and if he comes out in the first or second quarter and is looking like he's got a pep in his step, hits a couple jump hooks, draws a couple fouls, hits a couple threes, keep him out there. Why not?
Yeah,
I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, I was just kind of building off the point, just to make the point that I feel it's really important that how we allocate those minutes to. Those three should be process-based more than results, especially with someone like Mobley, who is going to have nights where the jumper isn't falling and they're coming up short and stuff like that. Like, as long as he's taking the right shots and making the right decisions, I'm okay riding that out. And maybe sometimes that might be at the expense of wins. Other games, it might get us wins. So you kind of have to have some trust in the young guys. And that's all I was really looking to say there.
For sure.
All righty. Well, this seems like a great place to wrap it up. Again, massive thank you.
Oh, we're out of questions, so I hope so.
Again, a massive thanks to all our listeners that submitted the questions. We tried to get to all of them. If not, you can add us at Chase Down Podcast, or you can also join our Discord, which, of course, the best way to do that, and the only way to do that, is by leaving a review on whatever podcast medium you find best, and sending it to chasedownpod@gmail.com. If you want to support us, you can leave a review, leave a rating, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. And again, to join the Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, just send a screenshot of your review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. We really appreciate the support. Basketball and Cavs basketball is right around the corner. Cannot wait. Hope you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.